Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Straight up the middle, huge hole, and this one's going to go to the house. Terry Swanson, touchdown, 71 yards. Woodside going vertical, got a man, touchdown. Desmond Phillips, second touchdown reception of the year, and this is the Rocket offense we expect. Woodside looking on man coverage, ball caught, this is going to go for a touchdown. Deontay Johnson, 67 yards, and yet another Rockets big play. Had a return moments ago and a big one, and this one's got a chance to go to the house. Touchdown, and make that Deontay Johnson his third touchdown of the night.
Another great opportunity for our football team, a chance to play an international game in London. We're excited about representing our city, our organization. The players are excited about going over, playing a really good opponent, really good football team all the way around. So it's a tall challenge. Obviously, you guys know we're going to start Deshaun this week. I thought that gave us the best opportunity to win the game, put him back out there and let him go. And again, I think he understands there's work still to be done this week to continue to get better, to focus on the things that he needs to continue to clean up. He's working at it.
He's a talented quarterback that can throw the ball with the best of them, understands his system extremely well, highly productive, has won two Super Bowls, talented individual. So I haven't seen any real drop-off in his game from my vantage point. They're like, you know, most teams that have an offensive line, running backs that they have, they're going to give it to those guys that do the job that they want to get done. They run it well. That's what they're able to do. They got a guy that can run as fast as anybody on the flanks. He can catch and move. They have a quarterback that can get the ball to him. And up front, they can dominate you up front. They're big and strong people, so those are the things that we have to counteract.
We're going to go with five wides, including Escobar, who's going to come in motion right here at the bottom of your screen. Former Cowboy tight end, just signed a couple of days ago. Flacco rolling and running, and he's going to have to, the ball comes out, helmets off, flags are down. It was Kiko Alonso who delivered the blow. Flacco's on his feet.
And Harbaugh's yelling at Alonso right now. He's in Alonso's face. Harbaugh is livid. You've just lost your quarterback for the game, and Harbaugh knows that.
Bends his head. Helmet comes jarringly off.
And it's definitely a penalty as the quarterback gives himself up, and he leans that arm in there. That's not okay.
That was a bang-bang play.
You concerned at all that there might be a suspension on that?
That's out of my hands, man. Like I said, it's a bang-bang play. I hope he's all right.
Joe had a concussion and a cut ear. His ear was cut from, in here all the way down to his earlobes. They were stitching that up without any anesthesia, so he's a tough dude. I was penalized correctly, I would say.
Feel like the injection was?
That's not for me to say.
Bang-bang play. Could it have been avoided? Maybe. But when the game is being played, it's one of those things sometimes you can't avoid. I do know this. Defensive players are taught when the guy goes into the slide, mm-hmm. actually go at his head. Because hopefully you can avoid him and jump over the top of him. Well, Kiko Alonso, he's not built that way. He's not athletic enough once he gets going to slow down or even to try to attempt to go over the guy. But this is going to occur from time to time.
I think you have to approach a quarterback with caution, absolutely, but as a defender, you read his intent. I see the intent from Flacco to get the first down, to speed up, to build in his process, so I have to do what I have to do to stop him. Of course, he hit him in the head. He's going to have to pay the price for that, but I want to say this. After the play, when that offensive lineman hits Kiko, if Kiko gets suspended, that guy should be suspended also.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed a Friday version of the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are. Toledo sports leader. Oh my goodness, that was an action-packed montage, particularly the very end of the action in the Baltimore-Miami Thursday nighter, a game that was not memorable for any reason whatsoever. A 40-0 shellacking of the Dolphins. who deserve every bit of their pain. Oh, by the way, Matt Moore blowing his opportunity to say, I should be the starter on this team and not free agent signee Jay Cutler. All of that stuff just completely forgettable. A lot of good stuff before that, by the way. Congrats to Jason Candle's Rockets on a monster win last night in MAC play against Ball State. Congrats to them. We'll talk about that a little bit. Hugh Jackson, don't give a rat's butt about what you do in London. As a matter of fact, if you don't come back, I'm okay with that. And as a matter of fact, leave the entire team there while you're at it. They've been talking about expanding to Europe for a long time now and putting a team in London. If it's the Browns, I'm okay with it. Let it happen. Jim Caldwell's got a monster game of his own. This isn't a monster win, though. This is a must win. Then it'll be a monster win for the Detroit Lions coming up on Sunday night in the prime time matchup against the Steelers. And then you first, of course, heard the hit. Kiko Alonso. It's too bad I can't play it for you from a visual standpoint. If you saw it, if you're a football fan, you already saw it. You either saw it on TV last night or you saw it on Twitter. And because the GIF is everywhere, the replays are everywhere, and so are the reactions. All I can give you is the audio portion of it.
Flacco rolling, rolling, and running. And he's going to have to. The ball comes out. Helmets off. Flags are down. It was Kiko Alonso who delivered the blow. Flacco's on his feet.
And Harbaugh's yelling at Alonso right now. He's in Alonso's face. Harbaugh is livid. You just lost your quarterback for the game, and Harbaugh knows that.
Bends his head. Helmet comes jarringly off.
And it's definitely a penalty as the quarterback gives himself up, and he leans that arm in there. That's not okay.
Well, that was a bang-bang play.
I'm going to stop it right there because the reactions you heard there are kind of all over the place. You heard a little bit there from Kiko Alonso himself, who said, indeed, correctly, it was a bang-bang play. That, in my estimation, should end the discussion. End the discussion, because he's right. It was a bang-bang play, and as such, all of the other stuff is just whining and crying. It's just talk. It was absolutely bang-bang, and I'll explain more about that in a moment. Then you heard from John Harbaugh talking about the injury that Flacco sustained. He is in the concussion protocol. Herm Edwards and Teddy Bruschi. So, as we get started, I've got a very, very full show for you. We've got a full show for you. Jim Christian is here, as always. We're going to be talking coming up in about 25 minutes or so with Sam Amico, a little NBA as we go into the weekend. The Cavaliers are changing their starting lineup again. By the way, if you're scoring at home, if the NBA playoffs started tomorrow, both the Cavaliers and the Warriors would be like six seeds, which is just all kind of funny in my estimation.
That's called small sample size
right there. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But in that small sample size, neither one of those two teams are have gotten off to a very good start. The Warriors are 3-2. The Cavaliers are 3-2. And like I said, they'd be down around the five or six seed right now. So, we'll talk about some NBA stuff with our friend Sam Amico from AmicoHoops.net and Fox Sports Ohio. Then coming up at 4:10 or so, we'll go into that Lions must-win game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think we can agree that even though it's still October, it is a must-win. So we'll talk about that with Chris Lemieux, Pride of Detroit.com. Then high school football week number 10 tonight. It is Bill Clark who will join us at about 4:40 with some previews of those games. But for now, I want to stay on the reaction to the Kiko Alonso hit on Joe Flacco last night on Thursday Night Football. You would think that some of these people who are reacting to this hit have never played the game before. And for those who have never played the game before, particularly those who have never played defense before, I can understand to a degree how angry and upset you might be about that hit, about the way that it looked, about the way that everything went down. Okay? I can understand that to an extent. Because of the outcome of the play, not because of the play. Meaning, if Joe Flacco pops up from the hit that he took when he scrambled and tried to run for a first down against the Dolphins last night, if he pops up from that, we don't have a story this morning. We don't have a problem this morning. We might have a penalty still on that play, but I don't know about that for sure, and I certainly would hope not because of what I'm going to tell you, okay? If you have never played the game before, you probably are going to agree with some of the tweets that I'm going to read in reaction to that play last night. However, some of the tweets I'm going to read to you are from football players. And they, you would think, would understand this a little bit better and have a real, true, honest evaluation and analysis of the game of football. Some of the Twitter reactions last night just border on the absurd. Rob Phillips, in a league that placing more emphasis than ever on player safety, that hit on Flacco is absurd. No place for it. Really? Kevin Seifert, ESPN. Kiko Alonso is going to be the next NFL player to get suspended. That was a shoulder to the helmet of a player who had given himself up. Kevin, step outside with me and let's settle this like men. If you think that Joe Flacco had given himself up and thus did not deserve that hit, you don't know the game that you worked in and that you work for now on ESPN. That is a ludicrous statement. Joe Flacco had not given himself up yet on that play. Not at all. We'll talk about that more in just a moment. More of the Twitter reactions. Dominique Foxworth, somebody, by the way, that I would get up right now and give a bro hug to. Somebody who understands the game. Who tweeted last night, 10:06 p.m. If you think Kiko should have been ejected, you're reacting to the result. The action warrants a flag, and even that could be debated. Hashtag TNF, Thursday Night Football. Dominique, love you like a brother. Don't know you, haven't met you, but would bro hug you and buy you a beer. Thank you for being the voice of reason and sanity. Ross Tucker, NFL. Love Jensen coming to Flacco's defense, exactly what he should do. Alonso should be kicked out and suspended at least, in capital letters, one game. Ross Tucker again. How is he not kicked out? If that's only a 15-yard penalty, then what is there to disincentivize players from knocking QBs out like that? And it goes on and on like this. Gary Parrish, CBS. Kiko Alonso needs a suspension for that. He just possibly concussed Joe Flacco with a dirty/unnecessary hit. All right, enough. I've had just enough. Well, one more. Mike Lupica, New York Daily News and ESPN. When is NFL going to eject guys like Kiko Alonso for kind of flagrant hit he just put on Joe Flacco? Head hunting in head injury sport. I can't read any more of those. Thank you to Dominique Foxworth for being the lone voice of reason in that regard. Now, you did just hear in the montage some other voices of reason, including Herm Edwards, and what you did not hear from this morning on Mike and Mike, which I try to listen to at least part of every morning, and I hope you do too. Right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket, was Mike Golic, who, again, had to be the player who knows what it's about because he's played the game and who knows what the words bang, bang mean. Let me say this because everybody in sports radio and in sports media and everybody with a blog or a Twitter feed has had their say on this. Let me have mine. Last night's Joe Flacco concussion / Kiko Alonso dirty hit / suspension call, fine call, penalty, et cetera, and everything else was the responsibility of not two people. It was the responsibility of just one person. And yes, I'm victim blaming here is what they might call it in progressive culture today. Yes, I'm victim blaming. This entire affair was the responsibility of Joe Flacco. I rise today, Your Honor, in defense of Kiko Alonso and defensive players everywhere. And oh, by the way, I played offense. In high school and college, I was a tight end. I took hits when I caught balls over the middle from defensive guys. This isn't just defensive guy here rising up. No. I am rising up in defense of my defense. In defense of my defense, that would be. My defensive brethren, because this is ridiculous. If you watch that play and watch it over and over again and replay it the way, I don't know, most of us have done, there is something going on here that is plain for everybody to see. There is a yard marker on the sideline near where the collision happened. It is the first down marker. It is at roughly the 10-yard line. Joe Flacco has his eyes set on that first down marker. Why? It's third and 10. It's a huge play. It's a big play in what at the time was a close game, 13 to nothing. Close meaning, you know, comparatively to the 40-point outcome. Joe Flacco is going for that 10-yard line. He wants this first down. He doesn't want three on this trip. He wants seven. He has his eye on that yard marker, and he knows exactly where to go. Guess who else knows exactly where to go? Kiko Alonso also knows where the first down marker is. This is a flat-out battle between one man who wants this first down and is going full speed to get there, and one man whose job is to stop it from becoming a first down, who is also going top speed. Those who would say that Joe Flacco running in the open field here gave himself up and that Kiko Alonso delivered a late dirty shot have no earthly idea what the play was about. We have seen in the National Football League, have we not, players, quarterbacks who are no longer quarterbacks, they're runners now when they break the pocket, and especially when they decide to tuck it and run. They become running backs now. But we see them kind of running hesitantly and just kind of tiptoeing, figuring out where's the big near, you know, how far can I go before the nearest threat comes to me? And okay, I see him there, now I'm getting down. And they get down and everything is fine. Because they slide early with plenty of time, you know, in advance of anybody getting anywhere near them. And that's what they do. They run gingerly and half-heartedly, either toward the sideline or toward somebody, and then, okay, I'm down. That's it, I give myself up. Joe Flacco was not running like somebody who looked like he was about to surrender his footing and give himself up. Joe Flacco was running full speed for the 10-yard line. And it only became apparent to him as he was going at about the 12-yard line that he wasn't going to make it, because here comes Kiko Alonso. And only at that moment, with Alonso coming full speed for him, does Flacco decide, I better get down, because I'm about to get destroyed. And deciding that late to get down, when Alonso has his top speed built up and is completely physically incapable of stopping his body. When I say physically, I mean that in terms of the word physics. According to the laws of physics, that object was not going to be able to be stopped in midair, the object being his body. Going top speed at Joe Flacco, who is a runner at the moment, who did not look like he was going to give himself up. He gave himself up at the very last possible second, at a time in which Kiko Alonso had no possible way, according to the laws of physics, from stopping from hitting him. That's just the bottom line. That's just reality. Watch it again and again and again like I have. Now, the next argument on behalf of those who are screaming, we have to protect quarterbacks, suspend Kiko Alonso, fine Kiko Alonso. This is dirty. This is a league full of head injuries and we allow this. How come he wasn't kicked out? The next line of defense for these knuckleheads is, well, even if he couldn't stop himself, he didn't have to hit him in the head. I ask you, when somebody is targeting a runner, and I'm talking about at this stage of the play, Joe Flacco has clearly established himself as a runner. He's going for the first down marker. And the defender lowers himself to throw his shoulder into the torso, the chest or belly area, the core of the runner, and then the runner at the very last second slides down with his feet first. When you drop your butt to the ground, what follows it? Your shoulders and your head follow it down. And so a target that might have been the core suddenly is going to end up with a shoulder to the helmet. And that's exactly what happened. It wasn't Kiko Alonso, he decided to hit Joe Flacco's head with his shoulder. It was Joe Flacco whose late decision put his head directly in line with Kiko Alonso's shoulder. This is one of the most bogus, ridiculous arguments that I've seen, and I come up all of the time. If you listen to the show with any regularity, you hear me rising up to defend football. And I talk about to all of these little pansies who, and these moms who won't let their kids, their little darling babies, play football because they're going to get CTE and all this other crap. And I talk about, no. We being coaches, teaching kids to teach tackling better than ever before. Heads up, not leading with the head. We teach runners not to lead with their head. You know, the infamous Earl Campbell way in which he would put the crown of his helmet into the chest of the defender and just spear him and knock him over while continuing to run. We teach runners not to lower their heads. We teach tacklers not to lower their heads. We teach them to try to impact the core. We teach runners to use their shoulders. But this is not a poor tackle. This is not a Kiko Alonso problem. This is not a head injury in the head injury sport problem. This is a terrible, terrible athletic play by a quarterback who wanted that first down and only decided at the last possible second that he wasn't going to get it and that he better slide. Kiko Alonso cannot be held responsible for something that Joe Flacco made happen. I'm watching it in slow motion again and again and again. There is no way for Kiko Alonso to avoid that contact. And according to the rules, there's no way that he should have had to try. That's right. The rules are very explicit on this. And I give Mike Greenberg credit because Greeny tends to be on the Mike and Mike program, tends to be the more... How do I want to say this politely? He's the more, ouch, I don't want to have anybody get hurt kind of guy. I can't think of the best way to say that. You could tell he's never played the game. He's the non-contact guy. He's the guy that really wants to make sure that, that everybody is feeling okay at the end of a play. I mean, I'm trying to say that in a delicate way without sounding really mean. But even he had the wherewithal today on the program, while kind of trying to make the case for Alonso shouldn't have done this and maybe he deserves a fine or a suspension, he went out of his way to read the full rule. Okay? A defender must pull up when a runner, but this is the rule. This is the NFL operations manual on sliding players. A defender must pull up when a runner begins a feet-first slide. This does not mean that all contact by a defender is illegal. If a defender has already committed himself, which he had, and the contact is unavoidable, which it was, it is not a foul. Unless the defender makes forcible contact to the head or neck area of the runner with the helmet, shoulder, or forearm, or commits some other act that is unnecessary roughness. And I would submit to you the last part of that, would be completely out of Kiko Alonso's control because he wasn't aiming for the head. Joe Flacco decided at the very last second to drop his head down into the contact area that Alonso had been pointing toward. But it's this next subsection of the rule that is very, very important. A runner who desires, and this is what Greenberg did today, and I give him credit for this, a runner who desires to take advantage of this protection is responsible for starting his slide before contact by the defensive player is imminent. If he didn't want to get hit by Kiko Alonso, he needed to slide 3 yards earlier. Because by the time he did slide, as he was going for that first down, contact was imminent. The rule continues on, if he does not and waits until the last moment to begin his slide, he puts himself in jeopardy of being contacted. If I'm the representative in the NFLPA of Kiko Alonso and they try to fine or suspend Kiko Alonso for this, I am printing that out in 185-point font. No, I'm hiring a skywriter to put it in 40-story high letters in the clouds, that subsection of the rule, and play it back over and over and over again. Joe Flacco decided not to take advantage of the slide protection rule by sliding at the very last second when contact was imminent. This is not on Kiko Alonso. This is all on Joe Flacco. And every single one of the players, analysts, or just nobody writers and media folks who were griping last night that Kiko Alonso should be booted from the game and now suspended for another game or more, catch me outside. All right? Let's go outside and talk about this like men, because I'm seriously ready to fight over this. And guess what? There's no slide rule that will protect you from me. Kushlin, let's get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Can you tell I've been sitting on that all day, Cushlin?
Oh, yeah.
I've been reading all of these stories, and I've been ready to rant about this all damn day.
No doubt.
I am so tired of the wussiness that they're trying to make football. I am so sick and tired of it. Let the guys in the contact sport play the game in a contact way. That is not Kiko Alonso's fault. Hey, Boogie Cousins had a memorable return last night to Sacramento, his old stomping grounds, as he became the first player since 2014 to put up a 40-20 game. Boogie finished with 41 points and 23 rebounds for the Pelicans, playing alongside Anthony Davis in his return to Sacramento. That is your Buffalo Wild Wings wild stat of the day. We'll talk more basketball with our good friend Sam Amico of AmicoHoops.net coming up next right here on the
Ticket. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Back indeed, rolling onward on a free-for-all Friday afternoon edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for joining us. I had to get that opening monologue rant in about the Thursday night football game last night. Just leave football alone. Just stop trying to ruin it to everybody. Now I want to shift gears and get into the National Basketball Association. First time in the young season we've had a chance to pick the brain of one of the very best brains in the business. And I'm talking about Sam Amico, proprietor of the outstanding hoops website called AmicoHoops.net. Also, of course, of Fox Sports Ohio and the Cavaliers broadcast. Mr. Amico, good to talk to you again, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well, Bob. How about yourself?
I'm great, man. I really am. I'm really, really excited about this basketball season. I'm really fired up about where we are in the football season. But I am not fired up about what I'm seeing from the Cleveland Cavaliers. Now, Sam, I mean, I'm not going to tell you anything you don't already know, obviously, when we talk about injuries. We talk about Rose missed a couple of games. We talk about how J.R. Smith and Dwayne Wade have flopped spaces. We talked about moving Tristan Thompson back into the starting lineup. Kevin Love started at the center. Jay Crowder was the four. Then he's the three. LeBron's the point. And Isaiah Thomas is going to be out until, like, February. So I get it. It's kind of a fluid, messy situation. But when you lose to a Brooklyn Nets team, well, and I think I heard the report that all 11 guys who are in uniform for the Nets have about, I don't know, 15,000 fewer career points than LeBron James does by himself. And you're losing games like that. I just don't like how this whole thing is getting started, Sam.
Yeah, it's a lack of effort in one hand. You know, teams have kind of figured out against the Cavs, if you move the ball around the perimeter, they don't close out on shooters. And they don't. And that's kind of been the skinny, the scouting report against the Cavs is, you know, hey, keep it moving around the perimeter, don't dribble, just keep it moving, and eventually you're going to get a wide open shot because they end up chasing the ball all over the perimeter. And part of that's on Ty Lue, it's not a lot of it, is you've got to figure out a new defensive scheme and, you know, figure out how we're going to play this. Do we need to play a little bit more of a switch and quit, you know, running all after the ball? Because all the ball's always faster than the man, right? So the Cavs are figuring that out, which you wouldn't think they'd need to,
are
being
they?
An older veteran team.
And
number one,
I mean, they
and number
be,
two,
but are they?
Yeah.
I mean,
no, they're not.
A lot of
but number two is that's the problem. Is they're an older team, and people forget that, and they didn't do themselves any favors not getting any youth this offseason when they really had an opportunity to kind of hold out and with Phoenix, obviously Phoenix didn't want to give up Josh Jackson, but in a Kyrie Irving deal. So I think that they did themselves some disservice by not getting any younger. You know, now, again, they might get it figured out. And I talked to a GM just the other day and he said, look, they may get it figured out. And then December's going to come, and Isaiah Thomas is going to come in, and then you got to start all over. So he said, "Well, it's a little bit concerning. It's not terribly concerning." And he said, "And even like this, they're going to get out of the East." So you know, I think that we get a little panicky. Except for you know, as I said the other day, now comes another long season of Cavs fans being frustrated as their team makes a fourth straight finals appearance. So, you know, I mean, you have to consider, and again, they all know, you know, look, we got to be ready in March at the earliest, April, and, but there are signs, you know, there are bad signs, and they're not making guys who don't want to dribble put the ball on the floor. And they did that against Chicago, they did that against Orlando, they just let them shoot, And when that happens, you know, Ty Lewis said, in this league, those guys are going to make that shot. So, you know, teams have been hitting some crazy shots against them, because the thing that they don't realize, too, is that they're everyone else's championship game. You know, any team with LeBron James, every other team's going to play their absolute best. And it's human nature. I mean, you see LeBron James coming, you get fired up. You see the Memphis Grizzlies coming, you know. You know, so they're just not, sadly, they're not prepared mentally right now. They're not prepared to go out and take charge of the season, and they have every reason to be. I mean, Kyrie Irving stiffed them and wanted to leave, and, you know, they should be playing with great fire right now, and they're just not. You know, Golden State isn't either, but guess what? Golden State's coming off a championship. The Cavs got their tail ends kicked, and they should be playing with much more motivation and determination right now. Part of that's on Lou, but part of that's on them.
We're talking to Sam Amico, AmicoHoops.net, and from Fox Sports Ohio. Sam, I could not agree with anything you just said more. You're 100% right. What I want to know is, upon whom do we place the blame? Where are we pointing fingers here? Is it Tyronn Lue? And I'm talking about more about the effort, more about the preparedness, more about the motivated, as you pointed out, with Kyrie part of this, not necessarily the they didn't get any younger. In fact, they got considerably older, if you will, with the offseason moves. But the part about being motivated and the part about, you know, the top effort and so on, because I feel like with LeBron James, this shouldn't be happening simply because he's the coach on the floor anyway, but he isn't the coach. Tyronn Lue is the coach. He's the guy who's got to get these guys ready. Is there a problem with his ability to communicate to his team the way he needs to, or is that overstated?
No, I think he's pretty, you know, he has their attention. And he has LeBron's ear, too, and that counts for a lot. Part of it is, you know, they do have some issues in terms of Kevin Love's never going to play with an edge. And he's probably going to do his best work in the first half. You know, and that's the way his whole career has gone. He's always been magnificent the first half and then kind of tailed off in the second half. And that's not going to change. He's 29 years old, you know, so I don't know what more you can do if you're Ty Lue. He's still talented. He's still their best power forward. But, you know, look, coaches all the time will sit guys and just, you know, take them out and never put them back in. And Lue may end up having to do that at some point. You've got to take command and say, look, you're not getting the job done. 15 points and 12 rebounds is great, but you're putting up great numbers, but are they winning them? You know, and that's not to pin all this on Kevin Love, but
it's part of it, yeah.
Right. The point is that they're not playing with any degree of intensity other than LeBron. You know, and at some point, I think that Ty Lue, and you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Ty Lue did this. At some point, you've got to, okay, you know what? We're starting four new guys next to LeBron in the second half because nobody out there is getting the job done. You're not closing out on shooters. You know, you can't, if you're the coach, you can't just say, well, nobody's closing out shooters and then keep the same guys in there.
Right.
You know, you've got to, if you have to make a point, if you're going to lose a game anyway and not play hard, put in Jenny Osman and Ante Zizic, you know, and at least let them run around out there for a while. So, I think, you know, the thing about this team is within a week we could be talking about, you know, hey, they're 7-2, they're playing great, everything's cooking. And it's just hard to tell. It's unfortunate to me that this is a team that, you know, they should be setting high expectations and standards in the regular season and say, you know what, we're going to go out and we're going to try to challenge Golden State's 73-win record. They're not going to get it. We're going to go out and make that point and set goals during the regular season. And I don't think they do enough of that. And I think part of that's Lou, part of that's LeBron. LeBron has always said, just give me the playoffs. Well, you know, you've got to form good habits in getting to the finals. Because last year, I thought they would have had a better shot if they had had better habits to form during the regular season. But those habits came back and crept up on them in the finals. So this team can be absolutely maddening. I mean, they were down 26 points to Indiana last year in game, what, 3 in Indiana, and then they came back and won. They just don't have that we need to really get it done. When they think they can beat a team, they don't play hard. And that's always been the case. And that's kind of the case with LeBron James' whole career.
Which is a really, really strong statement. And you're right, it has been. And I was going to follow up on my Lou critique by saying, now what about LeBron? What about the coach on the court? What about the guy who – and you know what's funny about it is we talk about Kyrie Stiffen. It's widely believed by a lot of people, and I don't know if you share it, but that one of the things Kyrie was sick and tired of being was, quote, one of LeBron's guys. LeBron constantly refers to the media as, I got my guys doing this, my guys doing that, my guys doing this. And he may mean it in a harmless way, like my teammates, but he makes it sound like they're my guys. I'm in charge. They're my support group. And it's one of the things that Kyrie didn't like being was one of his guys. But he does say that, and he does, you know, make no bones about that he's the leader and this is his team. So if a lot of the blame has to fall to Lou, which clearly it does some of it have to? LeBron's playing hard. It's pretty clear. But is he doing enough to lead and inspire the other guys to play as hard as he is and to carry that weight?
Well, in some ways, yes. You know, it's funny because Kevin Love told me probably, I think it was 2014, LeBron's first year back, and we're just kind of shooting the breeze in the locker room, and he joked and said, you know, and I thought, you know what, Kevin Love, he's got a personality where he'll laugh about this. Kyrie Irving does not. Kevin Love said, you know, LeBron is either mad at me or Kyrie, and he alternates weeks. And Kevin Love laughed, and he said, this is my week, and he laughed, and I thought, you know what, Kevin Love's got that personality where he can handle it. Kyrie Irving does not. Kyrie Irving is not going to take well to LeBron spending a whole week mad at him and, you know, being that kind of guy. So, you know, and I've always said, with Kyrie Irving, you could kind of understand. I mean, the guy signed a contract extension in 2014 the very second he could do it, and he was the man in Cleveland, and everybody loved him. And, you know, nobody thought LeBron James was coming back. Everybody was saying, no, why would he? The Cavs stink. He's going to go back to Miami. You know, so... I think it caught Kyrie off guard, and while they enjoyed the winning, we saw that it did have an impact on Kyrie. And I think in any profession, if you're the man at your job in your office, and you're the man for 2 or 3 years, and then all of a sudden they bring somebody else in, and you're not the man, well, you know, you hope you would be more of a team player, but it might have an impact on you. You're 21, 22, 23 years old being the man, and then all of a sudden, no, this guy's the man now, and you just, you know, you got to do your second fiddle. I remember the first time going to the locker room when LeBron came, you know, their horde of media standing around LeBron's locker waiting for him. And Kyrie was standing there getting dressed, getting changed. I don't think that bothered him, but I think you notice those things. It's like, well, you're, you know, when we're done with LeBron, if you're still here, we'll get to you. So I think that there's a lot that LeBron can't control, but I think that there is some that he can't control. I mean, sometimes he'll make a mistake and turn to a teammate and snap at him like it was their mistake, you know. So the one thing with LeBron getting older, having lost maybe half a step, you know, and by that I mean instead of finishing with a flurry of dunks in traffic, he'll now lay the ball in or draw a foul sometimes. Most of his dunks now are coming off the fast break. They're not coming in traffic like they used to. So with him, with him losing a little bit of that, a tiny bit of that, it's important that he starts leading by skill and example, because he's not going to be the main guy for much longer. You know, maybe 3 years, but you got to start preparing for that. So, yeah, some of this definitely falls on him.
We're talking to Sam Amico, AmicoHoops.net. Make sure you follow that website for all of the best NBA coverage, primarily focused on the Cavaliers, but all about the NBA Eastern Conference, including division opponents like the Pistons. Sam, our man Jim Cushlin here has got a question for you. Jimmy, go ahead.
Another interesting thing that I saw breaking a little earlier today is that the Cavs are apparently not going to do anything, not even make any calls in relation to the whole Eric Bledsoe thing. Bob and I were talking a little bit about this yesterday, Sam, thinking, well, you'd have to offer the pick, but would it even be the right pick? Your thoughts on that whole thing?
Well, yeah, I don't. First of all, I can tell you this: Eric Bledsoe wants the point. That's where he wants to go. And part of this, his whole issue with Phoenix started because of the Cavs. I mean, everybody heard that you know, for 3 months they were trying to. They were in talks with the Suns about Kyrie Irving, and Eric Bledsoe, of course, represented by Rich Paul, who represents LeBron and J.R. Smith and Tristan Thompson. And Eric Bledsoe's worked out at the Cavs practice facility, you know, before, and he was excited about it, you know. And then when that fell through, he kind of got, you know, And I think you could see it both ways, you know, real quick. If you're Eric Bledsoe, if you're the Suns, it's like, look, you're the one who signed this contract. We gave you a lot of money, and you knew how many years it was going to be when you signed it. So it's your obligation to honor it, you know. And then again, if you're Eric Bledsoe, you look at it like, yeah, you just got done trying to trade me for 3 months, and it didn't work out, and now you expect me to come back and be thrilled about it. So I guess you could see it from both ways. But as far as the Cavs go, you know, Eric Bledsoe would love to come here. It's just I don't know that the Cavs have the pieces. They don't want to give up that pick, obviously, which to me, I don't know. I don't know, guys. Don't you think if Eric Bledsoe, if you feel he's the piece that puts you over the top or gets you closer to the top, don't you make that trade and say, you know what, we don't know what that pick. That pick could be the number 10 pick in the draft. It could be 12. And the draft's up to your crapshoot that it doesn't matter if you get the number 1 or number 2. We've seen the Cavs, you know, Anthony Bennett. We've seen Minnesota with Derek Williams and, you know, Greg Oden. I mean, picks can bust. Whereas, you know, Eric Bledsoe is a guy who averages 21 points, 6 assists, and is young and athletic and a tough defender. So I would be surprised if they didn't get in on that. Now, you know, the report was probably somebody from the Cavs saying we're not going to get in on it because they want to, you know, make it sound like they're going to play hardball through the media, but my guess is they're testing the waters there, because when a talent like Eric Bledsoe wants to play for you, you at least have to show interest in him back, and I bet they are. But is he the guy that puts you over the top? Maybe, you know, could you start Isaiah Thomas and Eric Bledsoe in your backcourt? That's a pretty dynamic, high scoring backcourt, and athletic, and while small, size doesn't seem to matter much in today's NBA. So I think it's a long shot that they'd be able to get him, especially if they don't want to give up that pick. But, you know, if you want to keep LeBron, you've got to make the effort to build this team to win today. And if you go out and trade that pick and you get Eric Bledsoe, well, keep in mind, you've got him for a few more years. You know, and that's something that they've got to think about if they're, you know, kind of hesitant because of the pick, I would think.
I think that's a very fair analysis. Real quick, just on Golden State, because we joked before you came on that the 2-3-time defending finals opponents would both be around 6 seeds right now if the playoffs started now. Now, it's October, so that's just a silly statement, but it is weird that both teams are 3-2. Golden State got off to a little bit of a slow start last year, too, when KD came in and they had to work out their chemistry. But anything you're seeing out west that would change the dynamics of the Western Conference, the starts by other teams, the starts by Golden State?
No, you know, by the way, I think we should start the playoffs right now and have them both 6 seeds. I think it'd be way more interesting. But I think, you know, obviously they're still the team to beat, and that's pretty clear, but you know, San Antonio looks great. San Antonio always, when you count them out and you think they're ready to fade, always seem to find the extra life. And they've done that right now without Kawhi Leonard. And listen to this, guys. They're in on the Eric Bledsoe stuff. So, I mean, if they could get Bledsoe with Leonard and Marcus Aldridge, who's been playing great, and now this DeJounte Murray, who's a second-year guard that they drafted, you know, last year, number 29, he's playing, like, fantastic. You know, so maybe San Antonio. Houston, obviously, to me, looks really good. Houston looks, they've improved immensely because they got those two wing defenders in P.J. Tucker and Mamute, and look magnificent. And then of course, Memphis has been really good, beat Golden State. You just worry about Memphis breaking down all the time, but they got a real nice piece in Tyreke Evans coming off the bench. It's been great for them. So, and then they're going to have Ben McLemore in a couple weeks too, who's a nice bench piece for them. So, you know, anything can happen. And that's, when you go to 3 straight finals as Golden State and Cleveland have, you know, that doesn't happen very often for a reason. It's because it's tough. You know, it's tough. Teams are always gunning for you. You know, just as, the Cavs are everybody's championship. Now the Warriors are too. And one injury can change everything. You know, one little injury or misstep or, you know, all kinds of stuff. Going back to the 80s, you look at that powerful Lakers team with Kareem and Magic and those guys. They're coming off a championship. They got complacent, and they lost in five games to the Houston Rockets. Why? Because the Rockets were more talented? No, it's just the wheels came off the Lakers that season. And that can happen with anybody, anybody who's a favorite. It's a long, long haul, and a lot of things can happen. But, you know, right now these are still the two best teams in the league.
Are you okay with the changes to the starting lineup that will begin tonight when you got Jay Crowder now going to the bench, Tristan back in the starting lineup along with Kevin Love?
Well, that's what I wrote. Should have been the starting lineup like a month ago, and everybody gave me grief. Well, actually, no one gave me grief, but it's just a better story. I thought that all they should have done really was made a change at point guard because they had no choice and, you know, try to get younger on the bench. I think Jeff Green's been great off the bench. It's just not been resulting in many wins. Or, you know, you would think they would be 5-0 right now with their talent. They should not be losing badly to Orlando at home. You know, look, you have one clunker at home against a team like Orlando that's all fired up. You have a clunker and they beat you by a bucket or something. Well, okay, you can live with that. But they shouldn't be getting blown out by Orlando at home. They shouldn't be losing to the Nets on the road. You know, this is an older team. In fact, they're the only team in the league whose average age is 30. Even the Spurs are like 29.7. So, you know, interestingly, the Cavs are number one in age, Spurs two, Golden State's three. So it shows you that experience counts for a lot. But for the Cavs, they're not playing smart. And that's what experienced teams are supposed to do. That's where you have your edge. What you've lost in athleticism, you're supposed to be able to make up for it by being a quote-unquote old warrior. You know, and they have not done that real well thus far. So I think, hopefully for their sake, that the change in the lineup, which was the exact lineup last year, only with Derrick Rose now as your starting point guard, gives them a little bit more cohesiveness. Because obviously Tristan Thompson, Kevin Love, LeBron James and J.R. Smith are all used to playing together. They're all used to being the first unit. So that's what Ty Lue's hoping, is that gives them some more cohesiveness. Kevin Love, he kind of thought he would be able to mess and bang around down there with centers, and he tried, but I don't think he would have held up all season doing that. And this opens, gets him back out on the perimeter. And frankly, Tristan Thompson, while he's a hindrance offensively, at least scoring and shooting and dribbling, is obviously a very good offensive rebounder. But defensively, he does a very, very good job. He's the best guy on the team at closing out on those shooting guards. When he's motivated to do that, he's the best guy on the team. So that might set the tone early. Like, we got a guy out there who's closing out. He's even better than Jay Crowder's at that. So, and Ty Lue's defense, you look, you think, hey, Jay Crowder, this gives us kind of more of a small ball lineup. But right now, if you're Ty Lue, you're looking at it like, well, let's get some cohesiveness with the starting unit and then deepen the bench with Crowder, Dwayne Wade, Kyle Korver, Jeff Green, who's been, again, fantastic. So maybe that's all you needed to do.
Well, Sam, it's been a great look at the early start of the NBA season, particularly from the Cavaliers' perspective. We'll continue to follow you at AmicoHoops.net and advise everybody else to do the same. Sam Amico, thanks for the time this afternoon. We certainly appreciate it.
All right, Bob, thanks for having me. I enjoy following you on Twitter, by the way.
Thank you,
everywhere else, but especially on Twitter.
thank you for that, my friend. Always appreciate your time. Sam Amico joining us. We are so late for our top of the hour local sports center, so let's get there now right here on the
Straight up the middle, huge hole, and this one's going to go to the house. Terry Swanson, touchdown, 71 yards. Woodside going vertical's got a man, touchdown. Desmond Phillips, second touchdown reception of the year, and this is the Rocket offense we expected.
Well,
Woodside looking on man coverage, ball caught, this is going to go for a touchdown. Deontay Johnson, 67 yards, and yet another Rockets big play. Had a return moments ago and a big one, and this one's got a chance to go to the house. Touchdown, and make that Deontay Johnson, his third touchdown of the night.
Flacco rolling, rolling, and running, and he's going to have to, oh, not the ball comes out, helmets off, flags are down. It was Kiko Alonso who delivered the blow. Flacco's on his feet.
And Harbaugh's yelling at Alonso right now. He's in Alonso's face. Harbaugh is livid. You just lost your quarterback for the game, and Harbaugh knows that.
Bends his head. Helmet comes jarringly off.
And it's definitely a penalty as the quarterback gives himself up, and he leans that arm in there. That's not okay.
That was a bang-bang play.
You concerned at all that there might be a suspension in that?
That's out of my hands, man. Like I said, it's a bang-bang play. You know, I hope he's all right.
Joe had a concussion and a cut ear. His ear was cut from, like, in here all the way down to his earlobes. They were stitching that up without any anesthesia, so he's a tough dude. I was penalized correctly, I would say.
Feel like the injection was?
It's not for me to say.
Another great opportunity for our football team, a chance to play an international game in London. We're excited about representing our city, our organization. The players are excited about going over, playing a really good opponent, really good football team all the way around. So it's a tall challenge. Obviously, you guys know we're going to start Deshaun this week. I thought that gave us the best opportunity to win the game, put him back out there and let him go. And again, I think he understands there's work still to be done this week to continue to get better, to focus on the things that he needs to continue to clean up. He's working at it.
He's a talented quarterback that can throw the ball with the best of them, understands his system extremely well, highly productive, has won 2 Super Bowls, talented individual. So I haven't seen any real drop-off in his game from my vantage point. They're like, you know, most teams that have an offensive line, running backs that they have, they're going to give it to those guys that do the job that they want to get done. They run it well. That's what they're able to do. They got a guy that can run as fast as anybody on the flanks. He can catch and move. They have a quarterback that can get the ball to him. And up front, they can dominate you up front. They're big and strong people, so those are the things that we have to counteract.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It's a montage and a half for you right there. All of the day's news all compiled into about 3.5 minutes there by Jim Cush. And Cush, thanks very much. We probably could have dealt without some of it, particularly the Browns. Nobody gives a rat's A about what the Cleveland Clowns do. I said it before and I'll say it again. If they miss their flight back and stay in London for, I don't know, 20 or 30 years, I'd be fine with that. I'd be perfectly fine with that. Get out and stay out. You're an embarrassment to the sport. Welcome to Hour 2 of the Extravaganza. Let's get Chris Lemieux back in here right now because our time kind of got away from us a little bit there toward the end of the first hour. Chris Lemieux works for, still, the pride of Detroit.com when he's not pursuing master's degree. Loftiness? That's not the right word. Master's degree glory. How about that? Master's degree glory out there in sunny Southern California. He's still writing for dreary weathered Detroit at prideofdetroit.com. Hey, Chris, what's up, man? How are you?
Master's degree sleep deprivation is probably the right word. I've been very busy here. I've been working. I found a niche here writing about esports, competitive video games, which still blows my mind and a lot of this stuff. I know the NCAA was just talking about that. And then I stayed up and I was like at a Lucha Libre show, but then I found out about the cat that was on the field on Thursday Night Football and I wanted to make sure someone, I guess it's adopted now, but I was making serious inquiries here. I'm doing real gonzo journalism.
I'll tell you, it sounds like it. Boy, you are very, very wrapped up. Tony Romo, by the way, had a nice call there, by the way, talking about the cat's change of direction and full extension of its stride. Yeah, it was actually pretty funny.
That cat probably gained more yards than the Miami Dolphins last night.
Yeah, they didn't do very much against that stellar Baltimore defense. Hey, real quick on that. Before we get into the Lions and what I think a lot of people, even though it's only October, it might sound silly to say it's still first half of the season to me, a must-win game, but I kind of feel like it is. We'll get your thoughts on that in a moment against the Steelers. But what's your take on the Alonso hit? And before you answer, please know that I will fight you if you tell me that you think Alonso needs to be suspended.
I did not see the hit, so I am going to just go with you. He does not need
really
to be suspended.
You were doing master's degree and Lucha Libre stuff. You didn't watch it. Okay.
No, I seriously didn't. I did not. Like, I was watching. I was like, they have a show down here that's like half burlesque, half comedy, half Lucha Libre. I was out on that like the past couple of nights and doing investigative classes. Like, I've just in general though, like. We had this though conversation among Lions fans when Odell Beckham Jr. hit Jared Davis. Kind of, it was a late block in the back. It was but it wasn't malicious. Jared Davis kind of left, you know, he had his injury from that, but I know a lot of Lions fans wanted Odell Beckham Jr. like suspended or fined or something. And I mean, this is football. This is controlled violence, and sometimes these hits are just going to cause injury. I completely understand wanting to prevent some of these like high hits and targeting and protecting against concussions and all, but like you can't keep expanding that just because some player gets hurt. Like we're going to like suspend or fine them. That no one will be playing football by week 12.
I completely agree. And that's similar to what I said. Without having seen this hit, I won't ask you to get any more detail into any more detail on it. But I understand wanting to protect quarterbacks and everybody too. But in this particular case, everything about this in my mind, and I know I am very, very much in the minority when it comes to a lot of the football community that's all worried about head injuries. This was all Joe Flacco's fault and nobody else's. You'll see it when you see it. He decided to slide so late after saying, "I'm getting that first down." It was 3rd and 10. He wanted the first down, which is at the 10, and he was going full bore for it, not like kind of tiptoeing like, "I'm about to go down. You can leave me alone." He looked like he was going for it. Alonzo said, "I'm going to stop him from getting there." Then he goes down at the last second and gets hit in the head.
Stafford does that a lot, too. Like, he does those slides a lot, too, and it's very tricky to work with. Like, I got a feel for defenders trying to defend that thing because it's like, okay, I've got to stop this quarterback somehow, but if he decides to slide at the last second, that's going to get me with a penalty. So it's a lose-lose situation. Yes. I understand you want to protect the quarterbacks. I understand that slide's actually legal. I think the rules are fine as they are. It's just like, I mean, we've seen Aaron Rodgers kind of do this thing too. Aaron Rodgers kind of the master of picking up penalty yardage on like nearly everything in this game. He lines up and snaps before the defense can do a defensive substitution. He does these slides. Like, there's right now, like, I think defense in the NFL and around football needs to figure out some of these things that they're being challenged to on penalty wise. I don't think rules have to change, but like, I think defense needs to get a little smarter about how to handle these things. I just don't think right now anyone's got like a proper solution. But this is an old sport. Changes happen slowly, and eventually someone will figure it out. We'll shift, we'll evolve, and we'll move on to the next phase.
I totally agree. We're talking to Chris Lemieux, Pride of Detroit.com. Let's get to the Detroit part of this conversation. And the game against the Steelers, Pittsburgh is probably playing its best football after beating the undefeated Chiefs, who have now since twice been defeated. But they beat the undefeated Chiefs. They really rolled the Bengals. Defense looks tremendous. They do have some infighting on the offensive side of the ball, as you are well aware. Martavis Bryant isn't happy with his role. He wants a trade. But, my God, Le'Veon Bell just looks unstoppable. So does Antonio Brown. Number one, do you think this is a must-win for a 3-3 Lions team that has lost 3 out of 4? And number two, what do you think it'll take to slow down that Steelers offense, which is just getting better by the week?
Before that, I want to add one more name to that mix, and this is University of Southern California bias
Juju.
Now, is Juju Smith-Schuster, who miraculously recovered his bike.
I love that story. And he's good. I didn't see the
cleats.
Details.
He's got the cleats.
He's got some special cleats.
Yeah, it's got a nice design. I'm sure the Sunday Night Football broadcast will talk about it. I've seen the cleats. They look tremendous. They got great aesthetics to it.
Very cool.
I do think it is must win, and I think it is just because it's a matter of what this Lions team is. It's a must win, but I'm worried that it's not a game that they can win. This is, like, as you say, you've sold the Steelers all up and down, but on the other hand, knowing the NFL, sometimes dumb losses can happen. This might be it. But, I mean, there's nothing in this Lions team right now, even coming out of the bye week, that makes me think, okay, this Lions team is equipped to beat a team like of the caliber of the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, now that I've seen the New Orleans Saints, I'm a little less concerned by how badly they got beat by the Saints. I mean, we can talk all we want about all the points at the end, but they don't really matter much to me. The Saints are playing prevent. Like, this offensive line is still very bad. Greg Robinson's out. So the left tackle is now down to third string. We've seen obvious holes in the defense suddenly emerge after we thought the defense was kind of getting back on board. Le'Veon Bell and some of these weapons the Steelers have are absolutely going to task them. And I don't know. There's something wrong with this offense right now. It looked anemic. It looked out of sorts. It's making a lot of people question Jim Bob Cooter, and this is a tough ask. it's a must win, but I don't know if they can win it. And I've completely forgotten your other question. I apologize.
Well, no, it was about whether or not it's a must win and then about whether or not they can stop this offense. Like I said, Le'Veon Bell had over 300 yards rushing in the last 2 weeks. You recall that he started out very, very slowly because he decided not to have any preparation for the season. He didn't come to training camp.
Right.
He held out. He didn't do any workouts. And he looked like it, but now he's rounding into form. Antonio Brown looks like the most unstoppable receiver in the game, which is impossible given his size, but it's real. And Roethlisberger seems to have found whatever he lost when he threw five interceptions in an ugly loss to the Jaguars.
Well, you know, the Lions are getting back Glover Quinn, so the secondary, I'm feeling good about the secondary right now. Like, Darius Slay, Glover Quinn, I keep saying Glover, it's Glover.
Like, I say Glover, too, it's happening.
Yeah,
it just
looks
like Glover.
It happens, yeah, exactly. No, I totally get it. I had this long problem with DeAndre Levy for a while, too. I like this secondary still. So, I mean, the only question is against a guy like Antonio Brown, I don't know. Now, Darius Slay, he had a bad game against the Saints, but Darius Slay is someone I trust to have. Like, that will just be like a blip at the end of the day. Up front is a little more unsteady. I mean, Jared Davis looked like a rookie last time against the Saints. He's had some time to rest up. I expect a little more out of him. I think they can slow down the offense, but again, like, there's only so much you can lean on a defense in a football game in 2017. You just can't put your defense out there and ask them to win a game on their own, especially when, again, this Lions offense is just, sometimes they're going half a game without getting a first down. So I think, yeah, early on the defense can probably slow down the Steelers, but then it's going to be a question about the second half. Are they going to be tired? Are the offense going to give them a cushion to work with? Can this defense that's been built for a couple of years now to be bend, don't break, just not break, just keep bending, but bend enough? So, yeah, that's where I'm at right now with this team. Like, Chris, it's like I trust the defense in short spurts.
Chris Lemieux is our guest from PrideOfDetroit.com, breaking down the Lions and the Steelers primetime game. First of two in a row, by the way, for the Lions. Cush has got one for you, Chris. Go ahead, man.
And regardless of what ends up happening on that defensive side, there's one thing I'm a little worried about offensively for the Detroit Lions. Golden Tate has been missing a lot of practice this week with a shoulder issue. He's listed as questionable. That's obviously going to be a huge blow for the Lions offense if he can't go.
Yeah, and Kenny Golladay is probably, once again, not going to play this week. So that just makes the Lions receiver depth a little worse. And Marvin Jones, I mean, he's had some great games in the past, but he's shown that he can't be the only option out there. And Tate is just so versatile that losing him kind of loses a lot of the options that this Lions offense can work on. Although, I mean, going into it, I don't really know what the Lions offense is trying to accomplish sometimes. Its rhythm looks very off. It's tried to rely on a running game that once again has shown that it's just not going to get off the ground, even with a healthy Amir Abdullah. So I'm waiting to see what this offense can do. And yeah, if Golden Tate doesn't play on Sunday night, that's a big blow to them, because you're out Tate, you're out Golladay. TJ Jones has been okay, but that's your depth right there at wide receiver.
Chris, we got to run because we're a little late. We got to you late, but who are you picking in this game? It is a home game. It is at Ford Field. Again, all the things, all the considerations you just mentioned. Who are you picking?
So it's been funny. I've been sending off like weird, improbable scores to my editor every time he asks me for my score prediction. So I think on paper I set like Steelers 8, Lions 4. But no, I mean, seriously though, like I've got to lean towards the Steelers. I think the NFL, anything happens, da-da-da, all those niceties, and I think, like, you know, the Lions can absolutely upset them, but just on paper, there's no reason to go against the Steelers right now. There's just not, and unfortunately, Lions could be looking at a hole, and even with Aaron Rodgers out, like, there's just no way I can see them taking any sort of command to keep pace with Minnesota in the NFC North.
So you don't think they can win at Lambeau without Rodgers, with Hundley playing?
I think they can. I think they can. I'm more concerned about Minnesota now, right now, who's out now out to a 5-2 and a great defense.
I'm not talking about who the biggest threat is in the division. I just mean I'm looking at the upcoming games. If you lose to Pittsburgh, you fall under 500 at 3-4 after starting 3-1, which is insane. But then you got Cleveland, which is a, you know, it's a JV game. It's a gimme. Then you got Chicago, which is improving. Their defense is very tough too before you get to the Vikings. So in my estimation, between Pittsburgh, Green Bay, and Cleveland, and Chicago, you've got to win three of those four, to keep pace with Minnesota. And I think they can do that. They would be Green Bay, Cleveland, and Chicago.
Yeah, my friend Ryan says the Lions have to basically finish the rest of their schedule about 7-2 or 7-3. I forget how many games are left, but yeah, 7-3. I just don't know how I get there from that. But like, yeah, so after the Steelers, they'll have a little bit of home cooking. They'll have a little bit of time to kind of heal up and play some teams that are more to their size. It's just, this is more a test that, you know, the Lions aren't even thinking about, you know, wild card. They want to win a division for once. They want to, you know, see how far they can go in the playoffs. And the Steelers are a far more adequate test of what they might face in the playoffs. So, like, that's why this game kind of scares me a bit more and why I want to see them perform well against the Steelers.
I think that's very well said. All right, I'll let you get back to your what did you say, burlesque Lucha Libre show?
I'm not there today. I'm back on the grind today. I'll have to fill you guys in on some of this stuff sometime, and I'm still working on couple of football pieces, and I'll be sure to let Kush know when I've got a few out.
Well, but we're going to have to set aside some showtime just for a report on that.
Absolutely.
We'll do both of them at different times. Chris Lemieux, right. PrideOfDetroit.com, covering Detroit from Southern California. Good stuff, Chris. Thanks, man.
Take care.
You got it. All right. Hey, before we do anything else, and we do have high school football to talk about, let's talk about college football, too, because the Border Battle Contest continues. You know what this is. It's your opportunity to go to the big game between the Wolverines and the Buckeyes. This time it's up at the Big House, November 25th in Ann Arbor. The Ticket and Yuengling combining to provide this to you, along with limo service from Total Image Limousine. The runner-up prize, by the way, if you don't win the Border Battle Contest, you could finish second and get a trip for two to the Big Ten Championship game, December 2nd at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indy. For a chance to qualify, register online, 1065theticket.com, or text the word Border Battle, one word, Border Battle, to 64636. If you qualify, you'll attend our giveaway party on Thursday night, November 16th at the Blarney Downtown. It's all brought to you by Yuengling, True House of Munch, Get-Go Transportation, Churchill's, Country Hearth, TAS Electronics, Distracted Haunted House, and your football freaky friends here at the Ticket. All right, bottom of the hour, Sports Center coming your way. Week number 10 in high school football is here. How about it? Bill Clark, voice of high school sports in Northwest Ohio and Southeast Michigan, joins us next right here on the Ticket.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Back indeed. Thanks for being with us on this free-for-all Friday afternoon on the Ticket.
Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
You know what that means. We've been doing it all week long, and we're going to do it two more times right now. We're going to give you a pair of tickets to go see Kansas. It's going to be at the Stranahan Theater, and it's going to be on November 4th. That would be what, next Friday, I want to say, Kush?
Next Saturday.
Saturday. The 4th is a Saturday. Okay, so there you go. How about callers 5 and 6? Callers 5 and 6. I have two pair left. I'll give you a pair to each, callers 5 and 6, to go see Kansas on November 4th at the Stranahan. Sound good? I think so, too. And by the way, yes, they do sound good. They sound outstanding, as a matter of fact. All right, you know who else sounds outstanding? Bill Clark does. Every time he calls a game right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, and each and every Friday when he joins us to preview those very games. And he does so now. The voice of high school sports will have the call tonight, 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock kickoff between Central Catholic and St. John's, previewing the action in week number 10. Mr. Clark, welcome back to the show, sir. How are you?
I'm fine, Bob. How are you?
I'm great, man, except that it's week 10. I hate week 10. You know, I get so excited for week 1, and then we get like, oh, my God, you believe we're halfway through the season, week 5, and then it's like blink your eyes, and we're in week 10. And while I'm excited about week 11 for teams that are advancing into the playoffs, there's a whole hell of a lot of young kids whose seasons end tonight, Bill, and that's a depressing thing.
Yeah, that is. It's tough on especially the seniors. I mean, the sophomores and the juniors, you know, they got another year, but for the seniors, they're going to be putting on their jerseys for the last time, and some of them might go on and play some college football, whether it's D1, D2, D3, whatever. But for the majority of the kids playing tonight who are not going to make the playoffs and are seniors, they won't play organized football for the rest of their life, and that's a big part of their life. It's a big part of their high school life. I'm sure it was a big part when they were in grade school, wherever they came from. junior high or whatever. So, yeah, it's a melancholy night. There's no doubt about that. As you mentioned, for the teams continuing on, it's an exciting part of the season, part three after the preseason and or pre-conference and the conference, and then you go to the postseason. But for a lot of kids, yeah, it'll be kind of a sad night tonight when that final whistle blows.
Well, and I can tell you this, and you know, I don't think I've ever talked to you about your playing career. Did you play high school football, Bill, or did you just always
play
the action?
No, I played for 3 years and then realized they say if you can't play, then you coach. If you can't coach, you broadcast. So I figured that out really early.
Well, anyway, I think almost all of us who played can remember the night. I do. It's been 30 years and I 31 to be precise, actually, and I still remember what it was like having those pads on for the very last time. And it is a very emotional time. I'm talking about as a senior. It is a very emotional time for these kids. So. But they're not done yet. They've got to play that last game, and so let's get some preview going here, and let's talk, of course, about the 8-1 Central Catholic Fighting Irish. They're still number one in their division, or in their region, in Division III in the playoffs. And St. John's has a chance. They're number nine in their region in Division II. The game is at St. John's. They're 5-4. Is there a chance here for St. John's to shock Central Catholic and collect some computer points and get up in there?
Well, I think there's always a chance. I think Central played one of its better games last week against Finley. The offense started to come around. The offensive line started playing as a cohesive unit. Chase Bowen continues to have a great season, and Devin Rivers really started to run the ball. He had been doing it all year, but he had the last couple weeks he's been doing very well. But this is the first time in probably 6 years that St. John's has something to play for in the last game of the season. The last time they beat Central Catholic was in 2010 over at the Gallagher. The Irish have won six straight since then, and it hasn't really been competitive. But Coach Larry McDaniel, the first-year coach at St. John's, has these kids believing, has them playing very good football. So the Irish are not taking them lightly at all. And an upset is possible, but I think Central will be up to the task because they're also playing for a positive home game. For the last 16 years, the Irish have opened up the playoffs at home. And they don't want that streak to stop. And if they don't, then they've got to win this game tonight to take any mystery out of it. But St. John's, it's a must-win for them. And if they win, number one, they get in the playoffs, a good chance they get in the playoffs. And number two, they beat their arch rivals for the first time in 7 years. So there's a lot on the line for both teams, so it should be an exciting game.
Talking to Bill Clark, the voice of high school sports, week number 10, the final week of the regular season, conference champion. We'll talk about a conference championship game that's going to be decided tonight in a moment. Jim Kirschlin is wanting to ask you a question, but he's also answering phones here with our winning our prize winners. Jim, are you there?
No, I am here. I'm good to go. Let me go to the NLL if I can. I find this game kind of interesting. You have Anthony Wayne, 8-1. They're number 5 right now in that Division 2, but they're on the road at Springfield, not having as good a year last year. They are 6-3, though, but they're number 11 in Division 2. So obviously it's a must-win game for Springfield, and they'll need some help to secure a playoff spot of any kind. Anthony Wayne win and a little bit of help, and they'll get a home field game in that first round. How you seeing this one?
Yeah, right now Anthony Wayne is 6, so they're going to need some help to get a home game. They've already won the NLL championship. First time they've done that since 1988. Springfield, I think, has too many hurdles to get over to get into the playoffs. Even if they upset Anthony Wayne, they've got St. John's, they've got Fremont Ross in front of them. And Fremont Ross is playing St. Francis tonight, and no disrespect to the Knights, but if Fremont Ross beats the Knights, which they should, then Fremont Ross will sew up that last spot in Division II. The only way that I think that Fremont Ross wouldn't do that is if St. John's beats Central Catholic, because there's more points available for St. John's beating Central Catholic than there would be for St. Francis beating Fremont Ross. So Springfield, this is a pride game for them. It's their last game. If they're not going to make the playoffs, so this is one of those games that Bob and I just talked about. The seniors will be putting on their jerseys for the last time. They didn't win the league title, which a lot of people thought they would, so it's been rather an up-and-down season for Springfield. But Anthony Wayne is cooking on all burners right now, so I got to believe that even at Springfield, they'll come out with a big win. And, again, I don't know if they can jump two spots to get to a home game because they're 6 right now. But right now, Andy Brumgart doesn't really care. I think his kids just want to get back to the playoffs.
Bill Clark, I mentioned at least one conference championship to be decided tonight, and that we'll hop over to the City League for that. Is 6-3 start, Woodward 5-4. The winner is the City League champion. What do you see?
Well, I think that's an interesting game, and both coaches are very good. They've got their kids playing really well. They're both 4-0 in the City League. This is at Woodward, so I'm going to go back to my normal mantra. I think Rob Garber's kids, the fact that this is at home, Start has won a couple of city championships in the past couple of years. Woodward has not. So I think Woodward's got a little bit more of a chip on their shoulder to show people that, hey, we're here and we want to make some noise. They just missed getting into the playoffs last year by percentage points. So the playoffs are not involved this year, but a city league championship would make the Polar Bear program, you know, rise up for no doubt about that. So I'll take the Polar Bears in this one in a rather tight game.
Bill, I want to go back into the track and just talk about Whitmer, because why shouldn't we talk about Whitmer? Just because this might not be the most competitive game they've played all year. They're 9-0. They're number one in their region in Division One. They're going to be the track champions, very likely. Finley at 4-5. They're not going to be a playoff team. But just to talk about the role that Whitmer has been on and how they want to enter the postseason.
Well, Whitmer has been on a roll all year. I mean, Central Catholic was picked to win the track, and everybody knew that the championship game was going to come down to when Whitmer came over to the Gallagher earlier in the season, and it was a very good ball game. Whitmer winning at 21-14, Central with a couple of turnovers, but Whitmer made the big plays when they were supposed to make the big plays, and they ended up winning that game. If Finley pulls out a huge upset, which I'll say right now I don't think is going to happen, and Central wins, then they'll share the track title. But I don't see Whitmer stubbing their toe. I think they're loaded for bear, and they're looking to go into the playoffs as the number one seed. They're also number three in the state. So this is a very good football team, and they're probably going to take on a Lorain team. And you never know what you're going to get. Bob, you know this as well as anybody. When you kick football from Northeast Ohio, you have to really be ready to play, because you just don't know what that team is going to do when they come over from Northeast Ohio. But the good thing is for Whitmer, they'll be the track champions, and they'll also have a home game. And when you get to play out at Whitmer with that crowd behind you, that's a huge advantage for the Panthers. So they're stoked for tonight to claim that championship officially, and then they'll be ready to go on to week 11.
I know a little bit about that Lorain team because their head coach, Dave McFarland, is a former head coach at my alma mater. So, and they've got some incredible athletes. He has just done such a remarkable job of turning that program into a power. We'll preview that next week whenever that whole thing gets shaken out, if that is the way that it goes down there. Cushion's got the next game for you, Bill.
I want to go to the Northern Buckeye. An interesting game, I think, in this one. Lake right now, 6-3, right on the outside looking in. They're number five in their region in Division 5.
Number nine.
I said that backwards. Number nine, thank you, Bob, in Division 5. So they're just on the outside looking in, but a tall, tall order. They got to go on the road to undefeated number one in that same Division 5 region, Eastwood. Any chance for Lake in this one?
I really don't think so. I think Craig Rutherford has those kids playing at such a high level right now. They're undefeated. They'd love to go into the playoffs undefeated. They're the number one team in their region. They're ranked very high in the state in their Division 5. I think Lake will give them a battle, but I don't think they've got enough forces. I think Eastwood ends up winning that. And the interesting thing is, if Eastwood wins that and Liberty Center wins, then you've got two teams that are relatively familiar with each other. They're not in the same league. Liberty Center, obviously, is in the NWOIL, and with Eastwood being in the NBC, at least they know each other relatively well, and they would be a first-round matchup at Eastwood. Liberty Center would go that way. So, I think Eastwood is just going to continue to roll. They're clicking on all cylinders, and even though Lake might give them a battle, I don't see them stubbing their toe tonight.
Bill, I want to pick the next game, which might be the last. Well, we might be able to squeeze one or two more in, but this is just a big one. These are fun. 8-1 against 8-1. A couple of teams fighting for a playoff spot, and I'm talking about being in the TAC with Hilltop, number 9 in their region in Division 7, and Gibsonburg, number 6 in their region in Division 6. I just like these kinds of battles. Winner is very likely in, and loser is going to come up just short.
Yeah, that's the tough thing. And then, of course, there's the TAC championship involved in this as well. So there's a lot to be played for at Gibsonburg right now. And Steve Reeser will be on our coaches show tonight if Gibsonburg is fortunate enough to win. I shouldn't say the coaches show. He'll be on the scoreboard show tonight with Bill Boyle to talk about that if Gibsonburg is able to win that. But, yeah, it's one of those games where you love to have something to play for in the final week in the season. And when you're both 8-1, you're both playing for a league championship, and you're both trying to make sure you stay in the playoffs, there's an awful lot on the line at Gibsonburg. But I'll give the home team the nod, and the Gibsonburg wins it maybe by 10.
Kush, last game is going to be yours.
All right. Let me go over to the NWOAL Liberty Center. They're at home, 6-3. They're number 6 in Division 5. There's going to be a lot of teams, by the by, in the region from Division 5 when the playoffs do start. So they're in right now, and they probably should hold on at home against the 2-7 Patrick Henry team, who's obviously having a down year. Did I get that about right?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, for Patrick Henry, this would be their season. If they could upset Liberty Center and keep them from getting into the playoffs, the Patriots could hang their hat on that, because this is not a normal Patrick Henry team. They're normally near the top of their league pretty much every year, but this has been a down year, as you said, Kush. And Liberty Center still has something to play for. When you're 8, you're on the bubble as far as getting into the playoffs. So there's no reason to go in that game thinking, okay, well, we've got the playoff spot locked up. Patrick Henry's going to come out loaded for bear. This is the last game for their seniors. They're not going to the playoffs. They're not going to win a league title. So Liberty Center better be ready to play, and I'm sure they will be. And I think they will win it and end up getting into the playoffs.
You know what? I neglected a game, Bill, that I should have hit on, because I just talked about how much I like the 8-1 matchup. There's another one. From Liberty Center, we go to Liberty Benton. They're 8-1 hosting 8-1 Macomb in that one. That one could be a barn burner.
Yeah, I think so. Liberty Benton right now number 1 in Division 6. Macomb number 2 in Division 7. So their playoff positions are relatively set. The interesting thing is the Macomb quarterback got into some trouble off the field a couple of weeks ago. Did not play last week, but his backup came in and Macomb was still able to win. Now, I'm not sure the starting quarterback will be back tonight, but you'd like to have all your horses get a couple of reps in before you get to the playoffs. But Liberty Benton and Macomb, it should be interesting, as you said, Bob, both being 8-1. But I'm going to lean toward the home team and take Liberty Benton in this one.
There it is. The call has been made from Mr. Bill Clark. So, again, Central Catholic and St. John's tonight, the 6:30 pregame show. The kickoff about 7 o'clock, scoreboard show to follow that. 8-1, number 1 in Division 3, steamrolling toward another playoff berth are the Fighting Irish St. John's, trying to pull off the monumental upset and make the playoffs in Division 2. If they win, they're at number 9 looking in right now. If they were to upset Central, they would be in. It would be something to behold indeed. Either way, it's going to be a great call. We can be assured of that, because Bill Clark will be giving it to us. Bill, thanks for the time as always. Enjoy week number 10 like all of the kids will, especially those who are never going to put them on again, or even the underclassmen are not going to play anymore until next season. Enjoy this one, and we'll look forward to talking to you at playoff time next week.
You bet, Bob. Have a great weekend.
You got it. Thank you, Bill. Bill Clark joining us right here on the ticket. I tell you what, Jim, it really is, you know, there's something to be said about Bruce Springsteen and that song Glory Days. Every time I get to this time of the year, I get nostalgic, and I start to remember what it was like playing these games and, you know, going into the playoffs. You know, we had a little mini dynasty where I played school back in 31 years ago as we won back-to-back state championships, something that, you know, teams like Central Catholic know a little bit about. But also, you know, my senior year, we fell short. We finished 7-3 and fell short of the playoffs to defend our back-to-back titles. And when you see that season end in week number 10, boy, it's, you know, it's just, it's nostalgic. It's a really great time to think about and talk about high school football. And I hope every one of those kids and every one of those parents really absorbs that.
No, that is so well said. Although my particular high school in Virginia, we were not successful at the time I was there. We actually went winless in our senior year, but it still felt sad, even to us on an 0-10 team, when the season finally came to an end. Felt like you were missing out on something.
It really does. You know, when you've put your heart and soul into it as a player, too, for all of those who play, they understand, you know, when you never get to put them back on again, it doesn't matter whether you're 10-0 or 0-10. It's a sad thing for the last time. And that's where we'll leave it. Music is a-playing, and Mike Miller is not with you tonight, but Jim Cushland is once again on Drive Time, so Drive Time is coming your way next. Then, as we said, high school football tonight right here on the ticket. Enjoy your weekend. We will talk to you on Monday afternoon on what we like to call Monday Afternoon Quarterback. We'll review Ohio State and Penn State, the Lions and the Steelers, and so much more. We'll talk to you Monday. Bye-bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.